This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. Nelson Rockefeller, born July 8, 1908, died January 26, 1979. Death came last night to the former governor of New York and former vice president while he was at work on a book about modern art. Jerry Landay reports from New York.
Rockefeller was alone when he died last night at his desk in Manhattan's Rockefeller Center, the victim of an apparent heart attack. He was found by a security guard, rushed to a Midtown hospital where repeated attempts to revive him chemically and with electroshock proved useless. As Rockefeller's principal spokesman, Hugh Morrow, noted, he had had no history of heart trouble.
He was a very, very strong man, very vital man. In fact, he'd promised his children he'd live to be 100, but he apparently caught up with him.
Rockefeller was 70, funeral plans to be announced by the family later today. Rockefeller had been at work last night on one of a series of books based on his vast personal art collection. It was to his art projects that Rockefeller turned after his final political rebuff by the conservative wing of the Republican Party. Rockefeller was denied the chance in 1976 to run for the office of vice president, to which then-President Ford had appointed him in 1974 in the aftermath of Watergate and the Agnew scandal.
I have no role. I'm not a candidate. I've said right along that I thought the president, after he's nominated, should then select his running mate. Until then, there should be no commitment of any kind or any moral pressure.
A former political associate said early this morning, politics was a thing of the past with Rockefeller. He was out of it, and that's it. A Rockefeller aide recalled his boss once saying, there's nothing worse than some old dinosaur hanging around on the fringes. Jerry Landay, CBS News, New York.
Rockefeller could have spoken his own epitaph. After all, he once said, when you think of what I had, what else was there to aspire to? The aspiration that was never fulfilled, discussed by Morton Dean.
The presidency. That's what he always wanted. That's what he aimed for almost from the moment he became governor of New York in 1959, after winning an overwhelming victory over the incumbent, Averell Harriman. The GOP presidential nomination was elusive. He was a liberal in a conservative party. His divorce in 1962 and second marriage in 1963 further estranged him from the party's right wing. When he finally veered to the right in the early 70s, it was too late. There was nowhere to go. Watergate had ensured the succession of Richard Nixon, followed by Gerald Ford. There are those who say, had he become a Democrat, he would have made it to the White House. But he said he never really seriously considered leaving the GOP, not even when Hubert Humphrey tempted him with the Democratic vice presidential nomination in 1968. Rockefeller used to disparage the vice presidency by saying he wasn't made to be standby equipment. Yet he became Gerald Ford's vice president, but only after he was fully convinced that being a heartbeat away from the presidency was probably the closest he would ever get to it. Morton Dean, CBS News.
Gerald Ford, the man who appointed Rockefeller vice president, said from Amman, Jordan, I have lost one of my closest friends. In Mexico City, the shout is Viva Juan Pablo. In Tehran, it is Death to Bakhtiar. Mass outpourings of very different tempers are underway today in Iran's capital and expected in Mexico's capital. But even in Mexico City, the vivas could change depending on what Pope John Paul II has to say on this, his first full day of his visit. Christopher Glenn reports.
The Pontiff's day began early as he received members of the Polish community of Mexico City, Poland, of course, his homeland. Then another long motorcade through the city streets with millions again cheering him to a celebration of the Mass at the Basilica of the Virgin of Guadalupe, patron saint of the Americas. During the Mass, the Pope will deliver what may turn out to be his most important address while here, in which he's expected to disclose what position he'll take regarding the growing dispute between left and right within the Church in Latin America, where nearly half the world's Catholics live. Traditionally, the Church has supported often repressive governments which come to power and not the oppressed masses. That stance seemed to change with the last bishops' conference in 1968, but the change in turn gave rise to the current factionalism. It's a tricky situation for John Paul II, for if he is too critical of the oppressors, he could lose the support of the institutions on which Church power rests. If he's not critical enough, though, the Church could lose the people. The path he'll take could be known before this day is over. Christopher Glenn, CBS News, Mexico City.
In Tehran, the troops stood aside today, and there was no reported violence during another mass demonstration. Bob McNamara walked along.
Days of whiskers on his face, a mouthful of gold caps, and a raspy throat yells, "Allah is great." And around him there are men and women garbed in black from head to toe, along with some children who respond, "Khomeini is great." The group is a knot of about 50 people, but it's a drop in a vast sea of humanity that marched to the Shayan Tower, a monument the Shah built to his memory. The crowd in all numbers in the hundreds of thousands, many carrying Khomeini posters. Some of the posters 10 feet high and 5 feet wide. This big demonstration gathered a week and a day after more than a million came to the monument to display a show of support for Khomeini and to condemn the Shah. But now that the Shah's been gone for a week and a half, the anti-government crowd is letting Prime Minister Bakhtiar have it, calling him a dog, a donkey, a puppet, because he has shut down the airport and effectively prevented Khomeini from coming back. Bob McNamara, CBS News, Tehran.
Italy's government faces another crisis with the Communist Party withdrawing support for the government coalition and the Socialist Party expected to follow. The Christian Democratic government is expected to resign Monday with new elections or cabinet posts for the Communists among the possibilities. On the eve of Deng Xiaoping's arrival in the United States, China has made another gesture. A 65-year-old Soviet citizen who worked for an American firm when he was arrested in 1952 has been freed, is now in Hong Kong, and will come to the U.S. to live with his sister and mother. Meanwhile, as Bernard Kalb reports, Washington waits to see the new face of China's vice premier.
It will be a marked contrast in Deng Xiaoping's. That's plural because when Deng was in the U.S. in 1974, actually at the U.N., and his visit here was never regarded by the Chinese as a visit to this country, Deng made a sharp attack on the U.S., lumping Washington and Moscow together as, to quote him, the biggest international exploiters and oppressors of today. Most of his rhetorical venom, however, was aimed at the Kremlin. But the Deng who will be visiting the U.S. this time has a different working vocabulary, still hostile toward the Soviet Union, but that very hostility, coupled with his dream of modernizing China, both these elements have propelled him in the direction of establishing a Chinese-American connection. During his visit, Deng will symbolize not only the new link, but also he will seek to project an image of a pragmatic China, ready to do business with the United States and the West. Besides Washington, he'll be visiting Atlanta, Houston, and Seattle before heading back for Peking a week from Monday. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
President Carter is spending the weekend at Camp David preparing for the Deng talks, which start Monday. The White House, in the meantime, has no comment on today's copyright story in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It says records of the Carter Peanut Warehouse have been turned over to the Justice Department, which apparently is looking into loans to the warehouse and financing of the Carter presidential campaign. The Cairo part of the latest U.S. peace shuttle has ended. Egypt saying the difficulties are not insurmountable, but no clear progress. Doug Sefton reports.
Roving American Ambassador Alfred Atherton finished up his latest round of talks in Egypt with a diplomatic smile, but also with an indirect admission that progress has been elusive.
There is still a gap. I think it's fair to say that without revealing any secrets.
Atherton has spent the past 3 days briefing Egyptians on his 7 days of talks with Israelis. From what little could be learned, the main issues discussed were a timetable for the review of the treaty and the status of the treaty with respect to Egyptian defense agreements with other Arab states. There was no indication that Egypt had altered its position on the issues, and the American ambassador departed for Israel, where he is presenting the Egyptian view before flying back to Washington for a report to Secretary of State Vance. Doug Sefton, CBS News, Cairo.
There's another snowstorm marching eastward today, snow falling from Oklahoma up to Lake Superior and heading for the Ohio Valley. Snow and rain reported in parts of the Mid-South. Very cold temperatures are moving into the Plain States, where ranchers report their livestock in danger.